welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Okay, hello, welcome to episode 269 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and my pal Sean Orford. Are you okay, Sean?
I'm okay. I think your computer's getting dementia.
How long have we been saying that, though, and it's still shucking on?
Yeah, I think it needs to go to U3A to learn some new skills, I think.
It's hanging in there. Every extra week I can eke out of this thing is like extra value for money on that initial investment many years ago.
I think we need to start one of those sort of charity projects to get you a new computer.
Maybe. I'd sooner do that than shave off my hair for a...
you could do both.
Shave for Be Brave and Shave or whatever it's called.
You shave your hair off, we'll get you a new computer.
Okay. liveinthepresent.co.uk is our website for any new listeners out there that want to know what we're all about. All previous episodes are on there, and if you use the search function on our site, you'll be able to find some kind of help to any kind of issue I would imagine you've gone through over the years. I would have thought. You reckon?
I reckon.
Although we're always looking for new ideas, so do message us via social media.
You mean looking for new problems? You mean?
New problems, new ideas. Yeah, well, we think we've covered most of the major bases, but...
There's always another one.
There's always little things popping up or stories in the news which kind of perk our interest.
Yeah.
Such as the Thai cave rescue of those boys a few weeks ago.
Phenomenal.
We're going to come on to that, about some of the stories that have popped out of that and some of the techniques used by the guys in the cave to help keep them alive, basically. Fascinating stuff. What have you been up to, Sean?
I've been cutting boxer's balls.
Boxer's balls.
Yeah, which are like
boxer's
head.
And what's it? Where's
a boxer's is like a plant. Well, someone said you'd been trimming your bush, is what they said.
Okay.
So I've been cutting these boxer's balls into balls.
Yeah.
So they're just like hedge things. But I was using a pair of scissors and decided to rip my hands to bits as well. So I'm covered in plasters and I've managed to bleed on my shirt here.
Very nice.
So typical.
Apart from that, you're okay?
Apart from that, I'm okay, yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, it looks like I've been punching someone, doesn't it?
Yeah. It does a little bit, like you've been in a scrap with one of your, someone you've been advising hasn't quite taken the hint. Or...
Didn't take the advice. It had to be a little bit more forceful with that one, yes. But, yeah.
You will meditate.
Yes, meditate. Ah.
I want to give a shout out to the Leverhulme Grand Prix, which I was a volunteer at. It was about just over a week ago now. At Birkenhead Park, really cool event that my pal Andy Mills and Andy Wright, two pals, helped organise. But it's really cool to see an event such as that. It was a bike race or a series of bike races at Birkenhead Park.
So I'd be allowed to compete with my electric bike?
Not on an e-bike, no. Maybe at some point there'll be an e-bike
do you think?
Race.
Yeah.
But there were hand bikes, there were the para guys that were going. So there's the elite dudes, they all went off about 1 o'clock, and then there was a junior race, and there was a female race. Really cool event. It was the first of hopefully, it will be an annual do.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
So yeah, we're getting bigger and better next year, but yeah, really enjoyed being part of that.
Yeah, good.
Right, we're talking about, being calm under pressure. We're talking about a range of things, really, because this event... these things like this crop up in the news every now and again, and the whole of the world kind of rallies around a group of people that are in trouble. And in this instance, there was 12 kids trapped in a cave with their football coach.
They've gone for a walk in the cave as a treat.
I didn't follow it that closely. I was just mad busy with stuff, but I did see pictures of where they were in this cave system, and they were deep underground. How do they even get that far?
I don't know. I mean, to get them out, there were places where it was only 15 inches that they had to squeeze through.
So did they? I take it they squeezed through in the first place to get.
Unless they came on another route, I don't know.
Yeah, I should have investigated at the time and before we came on air.
Yeah.
But anyway, they were deep underground. I think they were like 6 hours from safety for the dive team. That's how far.
Yeah.
The dive team had to go.
Yeah.
To get them.
And indeed, one of the volunteer divers died, didn't he?
Yeah.
Which is awfully sad, that.
Yeah, it's crazy. But all the boys and the coach saved. So an amazing, amazing achievement with loss of life. But one of the stories that's come since we heard about it, since they got out, is that the coach, the football coach, the 25-year-old guy who was in charge of them, was formerly a Buddhist monk, or trained to be a Buddhist monk for I think about 10 years of his life, actually, so from a youngish age. And one of the things, one of the techniques that he knew about and then encouraged his team to use to help keep them calm was meditation.
Which you know and love so well.
Which, I've struggled with and tried on a few occasions, but not quite got there. But the reason he realised that it was important, well, there are a few reasons, actually. So do you want to go through why that was a good call to kind of get the team meditating?
There's a whole list of things that lead to the same place. I mean, if people are meditating, they're calmer. If they're calmer, their body chemistry is reduced so that they are chemically calmer. But ultimately, their breath rate slows down. And when their breath rate slows down, they'll be using up less oxygen in the space because they had limited oxygen.
Well, yeah, when they were actually rescued, the point of rescue, there was less than 15% oxygen in the cave they were in.
Apparently, which is hypoxia.
Below 16%, funnily enough, you're at risk of hypoxia and basically your brain shutting down. So, but they were in for 9 days, so I'm guessing that had they been in a state of panic, the boys, or had they, for a longer amount of time, I assume there was an initial kind of panic that kind of subsided. Basically, they would have run out of oxygen before they were able to be rescued.
Yeah.
So that kind of meditation and that calming effect and this, the lowering of the heart rate and the amount of breathing saved their lives. Like, fact, ultimate.
Yeah. There's another... I want to come back to that one in a minute, but there's a weird one that I want to just wave a flag for. If you go on to a site called The Intention Experiment, or you read the book called The Intention Experiment... a series of quantum physicists are doing work at very, very fine levels of energy, and they reckon they can tell when the positive energy from one person reaches another person. So as in absent healing or prayer or anything like that, they reckon you can actually measure it. Now, I wonder whether, because that's a focus of news, whether there's lots of people around the world who are actually, without below their awareness, actually sending goodwill energy. And I wonder whether that actually has an effect on it. But that's we're in the weird space when you look at that.
Yeah, for sure.
But I wonder whether we're going to say prayer or whatever, whether that does actually have an effect on that, and whether that did actually help what went on.
I know. Well, I mean, I haven't... It's quite a vague-ish... Well, we'll link to the article which discusses it, but it doesn't go into in depth about how quickly the coach was able to kind of keep the boys calm, whether they were calm... just instantly, because young people tend to be a bit better at dealing with crazy situations. You know, I think of my two lads, when stuff's going on in the world, I mean, they're just generally oblivious to stuff. Or like when I'm riding to school, or and there's with Will, and he's on the road with some big vehicles. A lot of from the footage I've seen, because I've recorded his rides, people generally might be quite terrified in the situation he's in, but he's just whistling away, and I can hear on the video that I'm recording, he's just ho-humming, hum-hum-hum, like, not, he's oblivious to the danger around him. So kids generally are probably better at relaxing and being calm anyway. But it would be interesting to know that initial kind of hour or so in the cave when they realised that they were trapped, whether it was a situation of panic or whether how hard he had to work to kind of regain control of the situation.
But we know that he was a monk for 10 years, so he must have been very skilled himself in meditation. I want to point this thing out here, that all beings on the planet have the same amount of breaths in an average lifetime.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
Which is it's about 63 million.
Yeah, so like a little mouse mammal has a billion heartbeats or whatever, because their heart beats faster. Yeah. They live for a year or two.
So you can actually measure a lifetime in heart rate and breaths. There's a ratio of breath to heart rate. Yeah. So that people that are more anxious and shallow breathe and breathe quicker and quicker and quicker, they may have the same amount of breaths in the lifetime, but they tend to live shorter lives than people that are calmer and breathe slower and deeper.
I see myself as quite a calm person, but I do have quite a high-ish resting heart rate, like 70s, even low 80s. So that a concern of mine is that I'm going to have a shorter life.
I know this may be like a broken record, but if you did some meditation, you might actually find.
Have you got yours on your watch? Can you do heart rate on that thing?
Yeah, my resting heart rate I've got on a chart in here is usually like 55, something like that.
Right. See, I'm at 69 right now.
Yeah, no, I'm at 68. So yeah, I'm at 69 too. 74. Hey, we're synchronized.
74, 76.
See, if you look, I've been doing this over the last couple of months, the last couple of weeks, so randomly, but that's my average heart rate.
You're plotting this yourself?
Yeah.
Manually?
Yeah.
So what point of the day do you kind of...
I do it three times a day. So I'm doing it first thing in the morning, middle of the day, and then evening. So okay. I'm just checking blood pressure and heart rate. But my heart rate, if I'm running... is usually comes down to about resting heart rate about 55 most of the time, and it'll dip below that a bit sometimes.
Yeah.
So
okay. Yeah. Cool. Interesting. I need to work. Well, do I need to work on my? There is a history in my family on my mum's side of high blood pressure, of heart issues. Now, look, I'm pretty fit and lean, healthy guy, but I do have. I've got a small cholesterol issue.
Yeah.
Which. Meditation could help towards lowering my heart rate.
Yeah, yeah.
And calming my system down a bit.
And actually doing some active relaxation.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you certainly do a good amount of physical cardiovascular stuff.
Yeah.
So we would assume that your heart rate would be coming down lower. But how many times a day do you actually stop? You know, because the pressure's on, even when you're at home. Like, you leave here, you cycle home, you got the kids, you got, you know, it's like, when do you actually stop and go, ah?
Yeah.
And allow your system to come down.
Not that much, I would say.
Yeah, and I guess that most people in the middle years of life are going to be spike up on all of the parameters because of the pressure that's on. You know, you've got to pay the mortgage, you've got to do this, you've got to do that. Yeah, pressure's there.
Yeah. Okay?
Which is bound to go. But on the basis that all beings have the average same amount of heartbeats in a lifetime, which is the same amount of breaths, then if you can... have some control over your breath, then not only are you calmer, but you actually live longer. Yeah, is the key. So in the Ayurvedic world, in the yogic world, there's this science of pranayama, and the word prana means energy, like bioenergy or chi, ki, whatever you use, like prana. And the yam bit is control. So it's how do you control the energy of your body and the energy of your life?
Yeah.
Pranayama is a big science, it's a huge science. But that's what he was doing in the cave. He was doing pranayama with them. So he was teaching them to conserve their energy, their body energy, their emotional energy, their mental energy, I suppose, their spiritual energy, and enabling them to calm. So getting them to meditate. They're in the dark anyway.
Yeah, well, pitch black as well. I assume they had a phone with a torch on or something, or maybe they all had smartphones, the lads, I don't know.
But how long did the batteries have lasted?
Yeah. Airplane mode with torch. Yeah, I'm sure they were rationing out battery and all that stuff.
Because they didn't know when or if they were going to be rescued, found, or whatever, would they? It would have been that total uncertainty as to what...
Well, yeah, was it 9 days they were underground?
Something
but
like
I think
that.
They were found after 4 or 5, was it? So they will have had that kind of hope and, it's going to take a while, but we can get you out, and this is what we need to do.
Yeah.
But, so I guess it's that initial 2 or 3 days, really, of just not knowing if... people even know where you are, or obviously they will have been registered as missing, you know, within 12 hours or so. Amazing. I mean, there'll be a movie of it at some point, won't there? I'm sure, because it's just ripe for kind of Hollywood treatment. So that'll be interesting, and how closely and how much they talk to the guys that were survived, the family of the person that died. Going to make a hell of a movie at some point, isn't it? But hopefully when we see that film, if it's done the right way and it's not too kind of gung-ho and Hollywood, that we'll get this meditation side of things explained to us.
Yeah. I wonder whether we could persuade them to investigate the quantum physics bit as well, the intention. I wonder. Because it's interesting, when you do proper meditation, as in trained meditation, there's a bit at the end called metta, where you share the energy that you have with the rest of the world. Mm. You know, sending love to other people, I guess.
Yeah.
And whereas that's always been a tradition in lots of Ayurvedic and Buddhist meditation traditions to do that, the quantum physicists are now suggesting that actually it's real.
Yep.
It does actually have an effect. So Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was the guy that started transcendental meditation that the Beatles did,
yep.
He had this idea that if you could get 6 million people to meditate together at the same time, that you would change the whole course of human consciousness. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he never achieved it. Or
has it been done since? Surely with modern communication, we could organise some kind of mass meditation.
Maybe we should.
Sit-in.
But he reckoned, because in TM, Transcendental Meditation, you do meditation 20 minutes twice a day. And he reckoned if you could get the whole world into a rhythm, or 6 million people into a rhythm, of meditating together at the same time every day, twice a day, that it would actually change the whole way that human consciousness worked.
Wow.
I don't know how he came up with the figure of 6 million. Interesting, but, you know. Mm.
Do you know, how do you think you would have reacted then in the situation? Have you been you would have been a pretty good guy to have down there, I guess, to regain calm?
I don't, for me...
Do you work with groups of people that are obviously not under that level of stress, but do you work with, you go into companies or organisations where there are teams of people that are under a lot of pressure and are panicking and stressed? How do you get them all in sync?
Very often it's using things like... the stop, breathe, respond techniques, where it's breath focus. If you can get your breath down. The first thing is, anyone that's listening to this could feel this, where's your breath at the moment? Is it in your belly? Is it in the middle of your chest? Is it at the top of your chest? Where is it? Because as people get tense, you've got three lobes in your lungs, people will start to use the top lobe. So they're starting to top breathe and the shoulders come up and then they're shallow breathing like that. And when you do that, you increase the level of stress hormone in your system. Whereas if you can just take a deep in breath and just blow it out and get your breath down into your belly, then straight away the levels of stress hormone drop and yep. your rate of breathing drops down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the results, I've got a couple of results I need to stick up. One of them has to be the one moment meditation, Marty Burrison, which is an amazing little YouTube clip, which is 5 minutes, worth watching. But whereas I'm saying to people, start with 5 minutes and get it bigger and bigger and bigger, he's saying, let's start with the minute and get it smaller and smaller and smaller.
Right.
And so that you can learn to meditate in a moment. Now, and those kind of techniques are the ones that we use with the 999 workers, people that are right at the front end of the worst kind of stuff that's going on. How do they control that? And being able to just stop and just be able to take a breath and let it go. And it's practice to get you there, but once you know how to do it, you can be calm in quite a difficult situation.
I mean, this situation, obviously there's the initial panic in the cave, maybe that didn't last too long as the guy knew what he was doing and he got the kids under control, but then they probably get quite comfortable in the cave, won't they, and kind of, but then the realization that they've got this journey to go through, this 6-hour underwater journey through some tight spaces with no guarantee that the air is going to last. So in some ways, the tricky part once they'd regained calm in the cave was kind of building themselves up for this crazy journey with scuba divers.
But they were actually tranquilized.
Oh, were they?
Yeah, they weren't unconscious, but they were given...
Like a sedative.
Sedative, so that their system was naturally a lot calmer.
Wow.
When they were going through the system. So at times the kids were strapped to a diver who was pulling them along. And when they had to go through the top bit, there was this little narrow bit, 15 inches, where they had to stick the tanks up ahead and the kid had to go follow the tanks up. So you've got a diver up front, diver behind, taking each kid through.
Amazing.
You know, and they're bringing them out 4 at a time, aren't they?
Yeah.
It was, I mean, amazing stuff, amazing.
Yeah, what a story, man.
Yeah.
I mean, generally, we'll go through briefly some benefits of meditation in general, which I've linked to in the HuffPo article. We've also got stress reduction as a top one. What would you be your main benefit of meditation to someone who's kind of, or is it dependent on the case and what?
There's going to be an amount of depends on the case, but the main thing is that most of us have minds that are just like scattered everywhere. And we're the most inefficient thinkers, feelers and doers. And because of that, most people are quite ineffective. Whereas if you can learn to focus the beam of your attention and be mindfully in the moment, you can become the most effective, productive and happy person.
Yep.
Yeah, because, and the difference is that when you meditate, you're controlling it, and it isn't controlling you, whatever the it is, whether it's anxiety, depression, whatever it is that's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's the key. You are in control of it. And ultimately, you are in control of your body. And as you can see with this, you know, if you can reduce your heart rate, you can reduce your breath, you reduce the stress hormone in your system, you're healthier longer.
Yeah, well, that's it. One of the points is it can actually slow the aging process. Because, yeah, like say you are breathing slower, your heart's slowing down, and you just generally like a whale.
But the thing is, as soon as you start to realise that the age comes in breaths and heartbeats rather than years, it explains why some people, when they're older, still appear young, and some people, when they're younger, appear quite old.
Yeah.
Because they're actually, from a breath age and a heartbeat age, they are old or they are young.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? That's
okay.
So being able to calm down. People say, but when you do exercise, your breath rate speeds up, doesn't it? You're breathing like crazy. But that's not the point. Is that once you've done your exercise and you've taught your cardiovascular system, then what happens is when you come to rest, then your breath slows right down and your heart rate goes right down.
Yeah.
You know?
I wonder what the resting heart rate of some of these Tour de France cyclists. I know Olympic swimmers have a resting heart rate of like in the 40s.
Yeah, just like, it gets right down.
It's crazy.
Right down. Yeah, yeah. Like I say, when I'm running regularly, it's my heart rate is 55 down from there. If I'm regularly exercising, if I stop exercising, it goes up into the early 60s.
Yeah.
You know? But I mean that's an interesting thing. You and I both wear. I'm wearing a Fitbit. You're wearing a smartphone.
Apple Watch. Yeah.
Smart job, yeah. But
yep.
All the time, it tells you what your heart rate's doing, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. There's a lot of data there out for us.
Yeah.
But I guess one of the things is not to panic about the data. If all of a sudden you, because I found out I got high cholesterol a few years ago, ish, and I had that initial kind of panic, like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god, what's it? What does it mean? What does it mean? What does it mean? What do I need to do? Am I going to die? Mm-hmm. What the hell? But yeah, learning to calm those initial feelings.
And one of the things that we don't know, even now with cholesterol...
And take control of it, yeah, really.
Is we've got this idea of what cholesterol does and doesn't do. We actually need cholesterol in our system. We haven't got it, you'd die.
Yeah.
Yeah, so cholesterol is about how your nervous system works, the myelin sheaths on your nerves, the grey and white matter in your brain. It's like you need cholesterol. The issue is the balance and good cholesterol, bad cholesterol, that kind of stuff. So we get a bit panicky about it, but hang on.
Yeah.
And it's a bit like blood pressure, too. They used to say... You could be 100 plus your age at the top end, and now they're saying, oh, no, it needs to be 120 or less.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's the way that you look at it.
Yeah, I mean, a situation like that, the lads went through, teaches you a lot about yourself. You don't have to wait for something like that to learn about yourself, do you? Whether it's checking on how your cholesterol is, what your blood pressure is. And when you do find out the information, which you might have avoided or resisted finding out for 30, 40 plus years, don't panic when you get it.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that's interesting about the way it will happen for these guys is that in their tradition, that if you go through this kind of death type situation and you come out the other side, traditionally you would then go and spend time in a monastery to pay the time back, to kind of give gratitude for what you've done. So that all those kids will go and spend, it'll be a short period of time, like, you know, a month or something like that, they'll spend as a monk in a monastery and be ordained as monks because of what they've been through.
Mm.
Which I think is quite powerful, because it's like when you do the 10 days sit at the Vipassana ashram, where you're in silence for 10 days, they'll go into like a silent meditation phase for like a month or whatever.
Yeah.
Then they're going to do. And that's powerful in itself. And that experience that they've had, you can't go on a course to learn that. You have to do it firsthand. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's good.
Okay. You've got a resource you want to mention?
Well, I've got two. One is the Light on Pranayama, which is by a guy called B.S. Iyengar. Some people will know about Iyengar yoga. But he did a lot of work on pranayama. Really good book, Light on Pranayama. And the other one is the One Moment Meditation clip that's on YouTube, which is amazing. That's worth watching. Yeah, both of which are about how do you control your energy. That's what it's about, pranayama. And in meditating and in doing your breath right, then you actually conserve your energy. You become more efficient physically, emotionally, mentally.
Yeah, cool. I'll give a shout out to our free morning and evening meditation files on our website, which...
Yeah,
no cost to anyone. If you've already signed up to our mailing list already and you've forgotten what the link is, send me a message, ed@livingthepresent.co.uk, and I'll remind you if you can't dig out the email. But if you're not on our list, just stick your email address in the box on the website and you'll get sent a link to download a couple of MP3 files, which you can... good little starting place.
And that's about how do you get your head on the right way to get the best out of the day first thing in the morning, and then how at the end of the day do you download any negative stresses so that you don't carry those around with you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, good positive stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right, cool. We'll be back for more next week. Send us a message via Twitter, Facebook, Instagram if you'd like us to discuss anything in particular. And check out the website as well for all the show notes and links.
Yep.
All done.
Keep smiling. Yep.
See you next time, John.
Bye.
See ya.